Thanks for listening to the news live on WBEZ and NPR. The WBEZ stream sounds great in the kitchen on your smart speaker and anywhere on the WBEZ app. Listen every day.
From WBEZ Chicago, this is Nerdette. I'm Greta Johnson. We did it. We made it to another weekend. Coming up, we've heard fall TV is going to be full of reality shows because of the writers and actors strikes, but reality TV is facing a reckoning of its own.
I do not have the idiot guide to starting a union in one day that I will learn quickly.
But first, it's our chance to sit back and unwind from the week with two excellent humans. With us today, we have Anne Helen Peterson, the host of the Crooked Media podcast Work Appropriate, who writes the Culture Study newsletter. Anne, hello.
It is a pleasure to be here.
Oh my gosh, it's a pleasure to have you. Also here is Vulture's podcast critic, Nick Kwa. Nick, hello.
Hello, we're alive. Incredible. Incredible.
Okay, so before we get to the stories that y'all actually prepared for, I have a very strange and very quick, like, fake pop quiz, which is, this week, the Washington Post wrote a feature about the official Guinness Book record holder for the world's oldest living chicken. She's at a farm in Michigan. Her name is Peanut. How old is she and what is her favorite breakfast? Anne, what do you think?
Okay.
This is so unfair.
I'm going to take this in a different direction altogether because I was about to get really excited because there was a different Guinness book record that was broken this past weekend. And it was for the longest Philly sub, like hoagie.
Amazing.
And it was in my hometown of Lewiston, Idaho. And, like, there's no place less, Philly.
Doesn't make any sense.
There's no place less Philly than Lewiston, Idaho. And they just, like, set it out.
I have to drive out there. I'm so compelled.
They set it out, like, the length of the street, like, so long.
They get
pounds and pounds of meat. And then they donated all the proceeds to the local Boys and Girls Club. But what if the favorite meal of the chicken is that Philly sub? That is my guess.
That's a really good deflection and subsequent guess.
Was the proceeds the actual sub itself? Like, did that get donated?
No, I think that, like, people from Lewiston came to eat part of the probably not that good sub and then, like, paid for it. And but I think it was $10,000 that they made off of it.
Oh,
so
that's
a good
great.
Stunt.
Oh,
a
wow.
Good
stunt.
Nick, do you have any sense of a chicken's lifespan? I did not.
So this is the oldest chicken in the world,
yeah.
You said?
Hmm.
I have friends who, like, raise chickens.
Yeah.
I have never talked in depth about the lifespan of a chicken. But for this specific question, I'm just going to guess, like 21, because
yes!
it's the drinking
yes!
age.
Yes!
Oh,
yes! Really? You got it. That's amazing. That's really amazing.
Oh, incredible.
Wow.
Have a Budweiser,
wow.
Dear chicken.
Peanut is 21 years old, and she really likes blueberry yogurt for breakfast. Which is adorable.
Oh, that's nice.
Isn't that sweet?
And hoagies.
Okay, let's get down to business. We're going to start with some podcast news because, Nick, I know you're really thrilled about this one. Strike Force 5 is a show hosted by a bunch of late night hosts, Stephen Colbert, Jimmy Fallon, Jimmy Kimmel, Seth Meyers, and John Oliver, some of the most excellent white men we can think of. It's a miniseries about how they are dealing with the actors and writers' strikes, and the profits from the show are going to help pay for their striking staff. I think I like that this is happening, but I'm not sure that I need to listen to it. Nick, as the professional, where do you fall on this one?
I fall exactly where you are. Like, I like the fact it exists, the construction of it to benefit their staffs, because I believe some of them, at least some, not, I'm not so sure it's all of them, but at least a few of those hosts have been paying their staff out of pocket through the strike. So it's nice that they sort of, you know, have cobbled together this financial engine to help with that a little bit. In terms of just, like, the actual product itself, I, you know, put in about 10 minutes. I'm like, I'm good. I'm fine. I don't need this. I don't have a relationship with late night myself anymore.
Same.
Anyway, I'm out. So who is this for?
Yeah.
Whoever is going to be the people who end up paying for the staff. So I'm happy in theory that it exists, I guess.
Is strike show an intriguing genre to you in general?
I think to some extent. So there's a podcast called Script Notes, which is hosted by Craig Mazin and John August. John August being, I think, on the actual WJ sort of bargaining committee. He's been doing this little, it's usually like a show about screenwriting and, you know, making film and television. But since the strike has started, they've done this little sidecast, is what they call them, where they have little dispatches, you know, explaining certain technical aspects of the strike, certain technical aspects of negotiation, scenes from the ground, that kind of thing is super interesting from a like an archival standpoint. Mm-hmm. But in terms of you know, people talking about strike stuff, like it seems like it's going to go for a mm-hmm. while. So there's only so much incremental information that can be produced.
Yeah, that's true. So, Anne, I mean, you think a lot about unions and workers' life, workers' rights and work-life balance and all that good stuff. Is this something you would listen to?
No, because I think I would rather listen to, I don't know, people talking more. Like, I'm less interested in the quotidian days of, like, a famous person who's already comfortable and more interested in people talking about the dynamics and that sort of thing.
For sure. Okay, so in other content news, the trailer for Meg Ryan's new rom-com was released this week. She's directing it too. Her co-star is David Duchovny. They're like exes who run into each other at an airport and are stuck at the airport for a very long time. This does look extremely charming. I mean, I haven't seen, Meg Ryan especially was like the rom-com queen for a very long time, but it's been a while. Anne, is this something you would leave your house to go see at a theater? Like, how excited are you about it?
Oh, I mean, so I live on an island now. And so, like, leaving my house to go see something in the theater, it has to be significant.
That involves, like, four forms of transit.
Yeah, I used to, like, go see everything in the theater. But I think that this is an at-home rental, but one that I will be eager to consume. Mm-hmm. From the trailer, it looks like a very classic subgenre of the rom-com genre, which is the comedy of remarriage. And it's not clear if they do get back together or they don't, or they're just talking through it. But like two people who were married, who haven't seen each other in a while, meet again, and everything that brought them together in the first place, like, still there. They don't loathe each other, although we see through the trailer that there are things that happened that made them really sad with one another. Mm-hmm. You know, all of the discourse around Meg Ryan over the past 10 years, for better or for worse, has been about her face, right? How she has used cosmetic surgery in ways that make her seem like an uncanny version of herself.
It's true.
And this is such a hard thing with aging, right? It's like,
yeah,
if women try to keep up with the norms, like, they can't win with that.
No.
And if they don't keep up with the norms, they're effectively uncastable. So I think that this is her re-entry. She looks like, you see her face and you're like, that's Meg Ryan, right? Like, she looks very much like Meg Ryan. The last thing I'll note is that David Duchovny's face in this, he looks older. And like that.
Mm-hmm. I think there is a sweetness to that, for sure.
Yeah.
Yeah. Nick, what about you? Would you go to this in a theater?
Oh, yeah. I mean, I don't live in an island, but I live in an island of the soul. So I'm taking every opportunity to like hit a theater. This is probably like, you know, the perfect thing for my local indie theater here in Boise. Shout out to the Flicks. you know, I first of all, I love these kinds of movies. I love airport movies. I'm a big up in the air head. I'm a big terminal head. big Duchovny guy. I'm always rooting for Meg Ryan. You know, she's had like a tough, I think decade and a half at this point, like just from
at least.
Yeah, from a career perspective, like the last movie that I kind of liked from her was Kate and Leopold, and that was like maybe 2004.
It's been a while.
Right.
Yeah. And this,
well,
I think
there was also
her
a scandal, if you guys remember.
I do not remember the scandal.
Oh, okay. So she was married to Dennis Quaid.
Right.
And then she made this movie with Russell Crowe, the name of which I can't really remember, but she was making this movie and it was like, and Russell Crowe like rescues people in some capacity. What I really remember about
Proof
this
of
movie,
Life,
yes, is that Russell Crowe's arms looked really good, and Meg Ryan was wearing like a tank top the entire time, and they had
she
an affair.
Looks good in tank tops.
They had an affair, and it was not managed well.
Oof.
And so that was part of like this discourse around her was like, oh, like she's not like America's sweetheart anymore.
That was, I think that was also a David Morse. That's if I'm not mistaken, that was Proof of Life
yes.
from 2000, I believe.
Oh, wow, 100%. Nick. Yeah. That is a very good memory. Well, you know what it makes me think of is the movie that came out last year, which is called Ticket to Paradise, that had George Clooney and Julia Roberts, who are like much different tiers of stars and have not aged a like tiniest bit. They both still look perfect, but it was, they both just like ooze so much charm that it was so much fun to watch it. And I think this one is going to do something similar, and I'm looking forward to that.
Yeah, no, I mean, these stars still resonate very strongly with elder millennials, Gen X, boomers, right? Like, they are the stars' faces that will always be on the tabloids, because the tabloids are always catering to the people who are the demographic that we are aging into.
Yeah, it's a nostalgia grab, and I'm okay with that.
Yeah. It's like, do you remember when Ben Affleck and Jennifer Lopez got together, and like, I was so excited. I was
like, the second time.
It was beautiful. And
I love it.
Like, the discourse on Twitter at that time was like, why are these olds so excited about this? And you're like, you don't understand.
You wouldn't get it.
I really do not care for the disrespect from the youths anymore.
Yeah, right. Well, I'm rewatching Suits.
Oh my God, I just started Suits last night. Is it Sam Sanders' fault? What happened? Did Netflix just aggressively push it?
It's Netflix's fault.
Fault. Okay. Yeah. Well, mine is kind of meta, because I learned that everyone is rewatching Suits, and that it's like the number two streaming thing on, like, it broke all these records, right? Mm-hmm. And I was like, do I need to watch Suits? And I've been looking for a replacement for Law and Order SVU. And
this is much more sunnier.
Yes. Oh my God, that's really
It does make
funny.
Me miss the USA Blue Sky like era, the Burn Notice, Suits.
Oh, I loved Burn Notice.
White Collar has a couple of those.
Yep.
Yes.
Oh, those are good shows.
Oh my God, that's so funny. Well, I'm glad we're all watching Suits. That feels right. So another story that caught our attention this week is from the New York Times. It opens with a couple of anecdotes about how tech bros in the city can't handle drinking cocktails out of fancy glasses with stems. This is infuriating, but also exhausting. I understand that masculinity is extremely fragile and must be upheld at all times. Nick, if you were a cocktail glass, which shape of glass would you be?
I don't know how to pronounce it. I'm a coupe, because I like to be cradled.
That's such a good answer. I was like, this question is dumb. We're probably going to cut it out. And then that was an amazing answer, Nick.
Well, Greta, what are you?
I don't even know. Or you know what I would be? No, I would be a ball jar that you drink wine out of. Took me a second to get there. What do you think?
I mean, my like clever Nick answer is that I would be like a martini glass, because I am clumsy and I tip over and that sort of thing.
So very unstable when full.
But probably I am like one of the insulated wine travel things, travel mugs.
Oh, that's fun. I like that.
Oh, that's so good.
So yeah, versatile. Because, like,
yeah, versatile. Just doesn't give a fuck. It's like, well, I'm taking this wine with me. Like, we're walking down the street. Let's go. No one can tell if it's wine, it's water, whatever.
My belated response to the martini thing is, spills the tea easily.
Oh my gosh, y'all are my absolute favorites. This was very fun. Will you please come back? I love you both so much. Thank you for coming on.
It's been a pleasure.
My pleasure.
In just a minute, some very high-profile lawyers have made some very strong claims about exploitation in reality TV. We're going to hear the latest right after the break.
Thanks for listening to the news live on WBEZ and NPR. The WBEZ stream sounds great in the kitchen on your smart speaker and anywhere on the WBEZ app. Listen every day.
A reckoning may be coming for reality television.
Reality television exploits affairs, bankruptcy, falling off the wagon. Just because Hollywood and the entertainment industry can exploit this green talent, does that mean they should? I do not have the idiot guide to starting a union in one day that I will learn quickly.
That's Bravo Network star Bethany Frankel. She is calling for a reality revolution, and she is not alone. This month, two big-time celebrity attorneys sent a letter to Bravo's parent company, NBC Universal, alleging that they have, quote, exceeded the moral and legal limits permissible in a civilized society. As the writers and actors strikes continue, is it possible that change could also come for reality TV? To walk us through what's happening, we have Claudia Rosenbaum. She writes about pop culture legal news for Vulture, and she also just so happens to be a lawyer. Claudia, welcome to the show.
Hey, Greta, thanks for having me.
So tell us about this letter. What does it mean for NBC?
Yeah, so Mark Garagos and Brian Friedman, two high-powered attorneys, mm-hmm. you know, both accustomed to the Hollywood spotlight and both accustomed to representing A-list celebrities. Garagos has represented, you know, in the past, Winona Ryder, Michael Jackson, Chris Brown, and Brian Friedman, Alanis Morissette, Diplo, Chris Harrison, when he was let go from The Bachelor. They sent a letter on August 3rd, earlier this month, to NBC's general counsel, outlining a range of, they say, behavior on their shows that they say, you know, NBC is a pattern of grotesque and depraved mistreatment of its reality stars, and that individuals on the shows have been mentally and physically victimized by NBC if they come forward with details of their mistreatment. And that sort of letter is just to preserve potentially relevant evidence in anticipation of future litigation. But the, you know, the letter was made public to the media. And so it's just interesting that they chose that tact. I think a lot of people normally expect in these sort of situations that the lawsuit comes first and, you know, which sort of gets retold in the media.
Interesting. So I feel like a lot of what's being alleged isn't particularly surprising, right? Like, I don't even watch reality TV, but I did love the scripted drama Unreal that came out several years ago now. But, you know, even I am not surprised by the idea that people on these shows are, you know, intoxicated so that they're more vulnerable or that their personal lives are being exploited. I mean, the word exploitation makes a lot of sense in this context. Don't you think too that that is in a lot of ways kind of integral to what reality TV just is?
Yeah, definitely. I mean, like on The Real Housewives, there's always like somebody throwing a drink in somebody else's face or banging on the table or doing this behavior that, you know, probably they wouldn't do if they hadn't been drinking. And there was this recent controversy on Below Deck, Down Under, when, you know, it's typically a super yacht crew works really hard for a couple of days and then they have this day off where they go off drinking and usually, you know, consensually hook up with each other.
Sure.
And then on this show, this episode, things got a little out of hand and, you know, one crew member was completely naked and was trying to get into another crew member's room who was, you know, for all intensive purposes, like, you know, very drunk and maybe passed out too. Production, you know, did immediately step in and immediately remove the, you know, the naked crew member from the woman's room. And he was, you know, promptly fired. And so was, you know, another person that had done things, you know, that they alleged were inappropriate.
Okay.
So there are instances where production does take quick action. And also you had asked earlier about NBC, you know, they have issued their statement saying that they are committed to maintaining, you know, a safe and respectful workplace for cast and crews. And, you know, they don't film the shows themselves. It's not their production company that does it. They have outside production companies, but they say, you know, they work with their third party production partners to make sure their appropriate workplace training in place and, you know, will investigate any instance and, you know, and encourage people to come forward if there are, you know, mistreatment or issues.
Interesting. So yeah, that makes me wonder about the producers and the production companies themselves, because I mean, I don't know. I'm just kind of trying to figure out who's at fault. And I know this is a really complicated one and maybe that's not even the right language to be using, but I just think about like how much pressure some of these producers must be under to help foster the drama that everybody's tuning in for. You know what I mean?
Yeah, I mean, it's definitely like a fine line that, you know, they have to walk in terms of like letting reality actually happen, you know, and not getting involved, but then also stepping in when, you know, things cross the line and knowing that if they don't, you know, they're going to be under the microscope.
It's so interesting. So yeah, I'd love to go back to the Bethany Frankel thing. Like, can you talk a little more about what theoretical protections could exist for talent in these situations?
Well, Bethany Frankel, as we know, was, you know, on for years, Real Housewives of New York. And she recently went on her podcast. I think she feels that she was taken advantage of. She said, you know, for the first season of the show that she just got paid like $7,250 for her season.
Wow.
And now she watches it get replayed over and over. And she feels that she should get compensated for that. She should get residuals for the streamings and so on. And she thinks that should be also the case for other people on those reality shows.
That's so interesting because that is exactly what actors and writers are striking over right now. I mean, among other things, but that's a huge one. So we should say too, this is also a lot bigger than just NBC or Bravo. A contestant on Love is Blind filed a lawsuit against Netflix last year, alleging inhumane working conditions and that cast members were deprived of food, water, and sleep. Do you think that this is like a moment of reckoning that could reach farther than just one network?
You know, especially with the fact that right now a lot of us are relying on reality TV for entertainment, considering there aren't scripted programs that are airing right now that are new and coming out with the strike, that it is definitely putting reality shows under the microscope. Mm. The lawyers have said that a lot of other people have come forward to them and reported allegations, but none of that has been made public. So whether it encompasses a wider range of people or individuals, it's really unclear right now until we get a little bit more information.
That's fair. So are you a reality TV fan?
Yes, unfortunately. Yeah. Actually, after this phone call, I think I want to catch up on Below Deck Down Under because I've missed the last two episodes.
I mean, it sounds like some things are happening over there.
Definitely they are. I mean, to me, I'm, like I said, I watch these shows, you know, Real Housewives and Below Deck, and they're giving a lot more heart and soul into it than a scripted drama.
Yeah. Well, and they're showing up and they're doing it.
Yeah. I mean, they're definitely laying their lives on the line, and a lot of the times, you know, their lives get ruined in the process. Hmm. You know, they go away to jail, they get divorced.
That is a really interesting argument. Like, you could definitely argue the stakes are higher because they don't have, you know, it is their real lives.
Yeah, the stakes are definitely higher. You know, any small thing in their past comes out, and, you know, every season somebody's lives looks like they're ruined on their show. So they're definitely risking a lot more than just, you know, someone who's reading the script for just a regular show.
That was Claudia Rosenbaum, lawyer and pop culture writer. Her story for Vulture was called Reality TV's Reckoning is Coming. And we are very curious to see if a lawsuit does in fact happen in the coming weeks. All right, that's it for this week. We are somehow in September, which means we have an author interview coming up this Tuesday for Book Club. It is with Angie Kim, and it's about her new book, Happiness Falls. I can't wait for you to hear the interview, and I can't wait for you to read that book. Also, the people have spoken. That's you. You're the people. And we are going to check in with Dr. Emily Landon next week about what the heck is going on with COVID right now. We would love to know if you have any questions for her. We are collecting them in our Facebook group, Nerdette Headquarters, which you can join if you go to facebook.com/groups/NerdetteHQ. But of course, we always love to hear your voices in these conversations as well. So we would be extra excited if you would send us a voice memo with your question. You can do that by recording yourself on your smartphone and then email that file to nerdettepodcast@gmail.com. And we are going to do our best to get you as many answers as possible. Nerdette is produced by me and Anna Bauman at WBEZ in Chicago and is part of the NPR network. And Brendan Banaszak is our executive producer. We will see you on Tuesday.
Hi, it's Terry Gross, the host of Fresh Air. We bring you in-depth, long-form interviews with actors, directors, musicians, authors, journalists, and more. Listen to our Peabody Award-winning Fresh Air podcast from WHYY and NPR.